The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, a very good morning to you. Just turning 5 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 7th of December, 2023. We've got two clocks here in the studio, and for the first time in about 4 months, they both say the same time. I'm all confused. All right, so it is actually 5 minutes past nine. Okay, you're very welcome along to another edition of the 9 till noon show, the penultimate show of the week, and we've got loads to keep you informed and entertained over the next 3 hours. And I'm going to invite you, as I always do, to get involved in the conversation, because we get new people message and text in every day. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number. You can send your voice notes to that number as well, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. And if email is your thing, and we had a few emails in overnight, which I'll get to a little later on, comments@highlandradio.com, that's the email address. And good morning, Annie. Good morning, Dolores. It's always good to have the two of you and the hundreds of others that join us to watch the programme every single day across the various platforms and on our website. And I'll tell you early on, if you want to, maybe it suits you, or you're at home and you're sick of watching this morning, or hello, Audrey just popped up there. Maybe you're sick of watching this morning or other stuff that's got nothing to do with you. Well, you can watch your own radio show on the TV. Your smart TV will have YouTube on it. Just type in Highland Radio Ireland. You'll see we're live. You can do the same on your Fire Stick. Many of you out there have your Fire Sticks as well. The YouTube app, Highland Radio Ireland. We're across Facebook and across your mobile devices as well. And also there's a little Watch Live tab on our website, so you can watch live in the browser there. It's just more ways for you to interact. And also too, and we've got a number of people, which is really quite important to me, who are have issues with their hearing or can't hear as well as they once did. And they watch the show and they see the subtitles. They're auto-generated by the social media, and they're able to track what's happening across their region, across the world, by watching the show and reading the subtitles, which I find very rewarding. Okay, it's a Thursday, so it's a bumper morning for newspapers. The Tyrconnell Tribune is first on the list. As the council struggles to get the new county development plan over the line, it seems that a number of key recommendations from the Office of Planning Regulator are causing major issues for the elected members and rural dwellers. The most impacted are those hoping to build a house in the countryside or seeking access on junctions along the N56. A plenary meeting of the council to finalise the plan was scheduled for next Thursday. That's now cancelled until February. This, it appears, is due to the complexity of works relating to the 286 submissions and to complete the report of the chief executive of the council. Sources told the Tribune that there is an increase in the housing target in Letterkenny. In effect, the OPR accepts the housing target for Letterkenny in the recently adopted Letterkenny plan. There's also an increase in housing targets for urban and rural settlement relative to their scale. However, there is a decrease proposed in housing targets for the open countryside. Therefore, any further report seems likely to result in the distribution of housing targets from rural to urban areas. So this is really quite important. It's an important piece of work here from John McAteer, because, you know, in a year, 2 years, 3 years' time, when you're trying to seek planning permission in some of these areas, this is the kind of decision that could mean a yay or nay. So it's really quite significant and well worth noting at this stage of the process. This is an issue we're going to talk about a little later on in the programme, and it's in the Donegal News this morning. Parents across Donegal have had to remortgage their homes in order to help pay off drug debts that have been amassed by family members, a senior garda has claimed. Chief Superintendent Aidan Glacken has described the drugs problem as a cancer on society that is continuing to grow. There are families, he said, in distress, families who are suffering and families who are at their wits' end, he said. Anything we can do to assist that, we will. His comments came at Friday's meeting of the Donegal County Joint Policing Committee during a debate on drug seizures in the county this year. The total monetary value of the drugs seized is over $1.6 million, a large amount of which relates to the discovery of packages of drugs which washed up on two Donegal beaches last July. So effectively, in terms of seizures, the majority, quite literally almost, fell onto the Garda lap. But I think I might have said $1.8 million. Are you a family affected by that? Have you had to... are you under pressure in meeting drug debts? I understand it's perhaps something that you can't necessarily speak publicly on, but it would be very interesting if you are that person and you can tell us your story and I'll relate it for you. How does it work in terms of having to meet someone's drug debts? Are there threats? Are there threats to life? You can contact us in absolute anonymity on 07491 25000, and if you have that story, we can get that out for you without fear of anyone knowing who you are or the fact that you're speaking out. But if you want to use this platform to maybe start something that might see even more action in this regard, just let us know if you want to. 07491 25000. The front page of the Donegal Democrat this morning: a Sligo man has pleaded guilty to a series of charges over an incident that saw him produce a knife while threatening a woman in Bundoran. David Moran appeared at Donegal Circuit Court on Tuesday in connection with the incident on March 28th, 2021. Moran, a 35-year-old with an address at St. Joseph's Terrace, Sligo, is currently in custody. Previously, Moran tendered a guilty plea when he appeared before Ballyshannon District Court. The Derry News this morning reports of anger at theft of items from child's grave. A Derry grandmother says she is disgusted after items went missing from her three-year-old grandson's grave amid a series of thefts at City Cemetery. Kathleen McGuinness said her family had laid items on her grandson Caden's grave for his anniversary, only for them to go missing in a few weeks. It was his anniversary in September and there was no wreaths and a teddy bear flower ornament put up, and they were there for maybe 3 weeks. And then they were just gone. They were gone by the first week of October, and that would hurt you on such a deep level. What's going on there? Is that something you've been affected by? Please let us know. 00353 866 25000 if you're WhatsApping or messaging us from the north. Budget watchdog has given the government a bit of a slap on the wrist, according to the Irish Independent. The government's own fiscal watchdog has accused it of using gimmickry and trying to game the system to downplay an inflation-busting $12 billion budget giveaway for next year. In an exoriating report out today, the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council says the government ignored spending overruns in health, blurred the lines between permanent and one-off measures, and failed to target cost-of-living supports to those who need them most. So, for an example, money spent in housing Ukrainians, money spent in the wake of COVID that's still on the books for this year, next year, but then disappears the year after. Well, we all know that there is still going to have to be funding for that. So whilst it might look like one-off funding, it's not one-off funding at all and is in the wrong column, so to speak. Spending too much money when prices are already high is bad value for money, the report says, and will add fuel to inflation, pushing up prices by 0.7% next year and almost 2% over 2 years. And unfortunately, the way inflation works is you need people to be skint, or so skint that they don't spend as much as they might. That reduces demand. And I'm looking at this in a really basic sense. That reduces demand and sort of drives prices down. One of the recommendations they do make is that support should be more targeted. And I think, do most of you agree that that is the case? That, you know, given people who can comfortably pay their electricity bill a big chunk of cash, is that good? Or should that money be better targeted to those who need it more? Or what? There are other measures, you know, one-off measures that are kind of universal that they believe should be more targeted, which would make a more equal, fair society, perhaps. The Irish Times, you would have heard Gardaí saying that they don't want to draw their batons or they're afraid to use force because of the risk of sanction or ending up in court or what have you. But it turns out that there are a few court cases on alleged Garda excessive force, and this is in the Irish Times. Between 450 and 500 complaints alleging Garda members have used excessive force are made each year, according to the Garda Síochána Ombudsman's Commission, that's GSOC, figures. But the number that end up in court is in the low single digits, and such cases very often result in acquittals. Allegations of excessive use of force or assault by an on and off duty member account for about one-fifth of the complaints made to the Garda watchdog annually. It, in a recent case before the courts, which concluded 2.5 years after the excessive use of force complaint was made, the accused detective was acquitted. The judge said the detective should have been commended for the way he conducted himself rather than prosecuted. That being said, the prosecution or lack thereof is not really the crucial part of that. He had this charge hanging over him for 2.5 years, which I think is one of the complaints we've heard from the Garda Representative Association in the past, that these allegations, these GSOC investigations, hang over members of the force for a very long time. 2.5 years seems an awful long time to not really know, where you're going. Right, the Irish Mail this morning. Boris Johnson, he was before the UK's COVID inquiry. I think a lot of people calling for these COVID inquiries were perhaps thinking that, you know, it might have said that the whole thing was a sham, or that, on some really big decisions, everything was gotten wrong. It's not really turning out that way in the COVID inquiry over in the UK. I mean, yesterday, Boris Johnson, and I watched some of it, much of it, that I could. And really, there was no, it was, it seems to be generally accepted that everything they did was right in terms of the lockdowns, when they happened, trying to flatten the curve, protect the NHS, save lives, getting the vaccine rollout, all being lauded, not questioned at all. Really, the only thing Boris Johnson has apologised for, if the truth be told, is that he didn't lock the country down quick enough. There was some big football matches and a big horse racing festival that went ahead, and that's really what he's been apologising for, nothing else. Maybe I think there are people that thought COVID inquiries would come up with a whole different set of answers or questions. But anyway, Boris Johnson apologised yesterday for the loss and suffering caused by the COVID pandemic, but insisted he did his level best to protect lives. In a highly charged appearance at the COVID inquiry, which I wouldn't frame it as that, to be honest with you, because I think it was really quite relaxed, and I thought he was not combative at all. He didn't take them on. He was mea culpa. He got emotional, so I don't really believe it. I wouldn't describe it as highly charged. The former UK Prime Minister acknowledged mistakes had been made and said he should have tweaked sooner that the virus could trigger a once-in-a-century pandemic. But he said the entire Whitehall establishment had underestimated the scale and the pace of the challenge. He said it was only when he saw the horrors of the outbreak in Italy in February that year that he realised its seriousness. The Farmers Journal this morning, over 18,600 hit by delay to Acres payments. The 46,000 farmers in Acres have been dealt a pre-Christmas hammer blow to their scheme payments. This follows confirmation that over 100 million in payments to 18,600 farmers in the Agri-Climate Rural Environment Scheme, Cooperation Scheme, will be delayed until 2024. Senior Department of Agriculture officials blame the payment problems on the complexity of Acres. It's understood that the department's computer systems are struggling to process the commonage scorecards. I'm glad to see this clarified, because when the story first emerged, I knew it was nonsense and said as much on this programme, and I think it really undermined the very good response to the awful tragedy which visited us on October 7th, 2022. But in the papers today, a claim that ambulances in the north were unable to cross the border into Donegal to help at the Chrysler tragedy on October 7th, 2022 that took the lives of 10 people has been declared untrue. It was said that the ambulances could not operate because foreign-born paramedics on board did not have visas allowing them to cross. The claim emerged during a meeting of the British Irish Parliamentary Assembly as a result of information published in a report called Protecting the Common Travel Area in the Post-Brexit Era. Fine Gael Senator Ian McCarry was chair of the BIPA steering committee that presented the report at the meeting in County Kildare. On October 24th, you might remember then, she made some reference to the report. She was quoted on that. There was a big hoo-ha, big controversy, but that report now has been amended. There was a big debate in the Dáil last night. The Dáil was twice on the verge of being suspended yesterday after a heated debate on immigration into Ireland descending into an explosive row. Rural TVDs were accused of using the Dublin riots and people's concerns about immigration to win votes in a motion that was labelled disgusting and disgraceful. However, Michael Healy-Ray blasted back, labelling one TD a horrible little man in a bitter row that threatened to collapse the Dáil. Is Michael Healy-Ray not doing really quite well out of immigration? Rural Independent TDs tabled a motion which called for an end to unlimited inward immigration and the introduction of strict migration laws to eliminate what they called asylum tourism. But they failed, and this is quite critical, because there was six of them. And I just want to make sure I get this correct. So after all of the hoo-ha backwards and forwards and what have you, the Rural Independents, there's six of them, they tried to pass a motion which would implement a cap on the number of asylum seekers permitted into Ireland. They were backed by just one TD, Padraig Tobin of Aintu. He's also clearly in favour of a cap on the number of asylum seekers permitted into Ireland. A government counter motion to keep things as is was passed without a vote because there was only seven people that opposed keeping our immigration as it is right now. So I think that's quite significant, because there's an awful lot of government TDs, an awful lot of opposition TDs, but only seven were going to oppose the government's counter motion, which would have changed, to keep the status quo. So seven, six rural TDs, Padraig Tobin, everybody else effectively was to side with the government to keep things as they are. And the Irish Daily Mirror, teenagers who spend more than 4 hours a day on their smartphones are putting their health at serious risk, a study warns. Dangers include psychiatric disorders, musculoskeletal problems and sleep and eye issues. Heavy users also suffered higher rates of stress, suicidal thoughts, obesity and substance use. So I think that's aimed at teenagers, but perhaps something we could all take a look at. All right, we're going to be talking about brown bins in a moment. If you have any questions about brown bins and their introduction, we'll get to that. I want to read an email here, because yesterday we had a guest on. Should I come to that email afterwards? Yeah, all right. So all households will be entitled to a brown bin recycling service under new legislation, which will come into effect in January. Around 69% of households in Ireland have a brown bin, and people who have up until now not been able to avail of the services are being urged to contact their waste collector to organise one. Pauline McDonough is spokesperson for mywaste.ie and joins us now. Good morning, Pauline. Thanks for your time.
And good morning to you, Greg, and your listeners.
Right, okay. So why is the uptake currently of the brown bin just around about 69%?
Well, that's because the collectors, the waste collectors in the country, haven't had to roll it out nationwide until this point. So up until now, it's largely been available in urban communities.
Unfortunately, Pauline, I can't hear you very well, unfortunately.
Okay.
Oh, no, that's better now once you're a little bit closer. Sorry, go ahead.
I'll just go a bit closer. So as I was saying there, up until now, it's only been available in our urban areas. So this new piece of legislation is bringing it nationwide to all corners of the country.
Okay, so where does the responsibility lie? Is it mostly with us, or is it mostly with waste providers to have these available to us?
Well, it's both, actually, because first of all, the collector has to provide you with the service. And then once you're provided with the service, every household should then separate out their food waste. And this is really important. We know we've got some really stringent food waste.
Pauline, unfortunately, the sound quality is so poor there. We might see if we can reconnect on phone with Pauline. If not, I'll just give the details out here. But it is quite important information. And for some reason, she starts off good. But then the line goes astray a little bit. Any comments on the old brown bin situation? Do you have one? Some people that have them tell me that they can be really quite a little bit stinky and unpleasant. But we'll find out where that waste goes and why it's important to separate it out from black bin waste if we can get Pauline back on the line. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number if you want to get in touch with us. You know that, don't you? Or give us a call on 074 91 25000, and your emails coming to us at comments@highlandradio.com. From February 1st, this is sort of staying with the recycling situation, customers will have to pay a 15 to 25 cent deposit on every plastic bottle or can they buy, and they'll have to bring back. Right, well, come back to that because I want to go back to Pauline. Pauline, how are you getting on now? Sorry about that. Pauline, why is it important that we separate the food waste from our general waste in the black bin? What can it be used for?
Sure. Well, I think there's two very important things for householders to understand. So when we dispose of food waste, if it goes into our general waste stream, that's normally a black coloured bin. When that we're basically losing a resource, first of all, something that we can do good with. And the second thing is, if that material is landfilled, when it starts to decompose, it starts to emit a methane gas, which contributes to climate change. So if we separately collect our food waste, we can convert that into compost, which can be used in agriculture or horticulture. Or secondly, we can make, through anaerobic digestion, green electricity from our food waste. So it's a really positive step and something that every household, no matter where they are in the country, can contribute to in a positive way.
Yeah, because you're speaking to an area that a great deal of it is rural. And when I talked of that 69% earlier on, I presume most of them are in urban areas. So this spreads it out evenly right across the country.
Absolutely. And it makes the service, no matter where you live, if you have a waste collection service at the moment, from January next year, your collector will be starting to provide the brown bin service. So this makes it equitable then right across the country, Greg.
All right, just a quick word, if you don't mind, on the plastic and can deposit. A lot of people are concerned that up until now, they were able to put them in their blue bin, you know what I mean, which is outside their house and is very, very effective. Now, to recoup the deposit, they're going to have to put them in the car, perhaps drive somewhere and deposit them. And it's counterintuitive to the recycling bin message. People feel that they're being forced maybe to do something that's less favourable to the environment when they could have just disposed of it responsibly at home. Have you any concerns about that?
Well, I suppose it's true to say, Greg, that this is one, it's a fundamental change, what we're going to see with the deposit return. So the first thing to say on a positive note is that an awful lot of this material is lost when we're out and about. So if we think of a day out, we go to the beach or we go somewhere and we use a litter bin. Well, none of those recyclables that we put in ever become recycled. In fact, they're just waste because they're mixed in with so many different things. So by introducing the deposit return, we're putting a value on this waste stream. And the second thing about that is, because we're paying a deposit, we are more likely to return it. Now, I understand that people may be saying, well, look, I have to do an extra journey. So I suppose to counterbalance that, we're all going to do our shopping anyway. The deposit return.
Well, a lot of people get shopping delivered, Pauline.
Okay, sure. But I suppose the only thing I can say is that to minimise the number of journeys, people will have to separately manage that waste, if you get me, hold on to it until they are going to a shop. And I understand, no, I do see the point that people are making, particularly
it's just not a reward for people trying to do that, who up until now have been, you know, trying to do the right thing, and now they're either have to change their habits or they're going to have to face a 15 to 25 cent levy on the plastic and can the plastic bottles and cans.
I know. No, I do appreciate that it is a big change, but I do think that people, we will get used to it and we'll all find ways to do it efficiently. I think the first couple of months will be challenging for everybody, but I do think we've risen to other challenges before in relation to waste management, and I think Irish people will get behind this.
Okay.
And I think eventually we'll also see communities getting involved, you know, maybe a local club collecting cans and bottles. That way they get a revenue stream. We feel as householders
The committed recyclers are almost being forced into a 15-25% donation to a local cause. I get you. All right, Pauline, listen, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you, Greg.
Under pressure this morning. Pauline McDonough. Yeah, so I was going back to that text before that because, I mean, maybe you are an avid recycler. Maybe this is a fantastic thing. But from February 1st, customers will have to pay 15 to 25 cent deposit on every plastic bottle or can that they buy. You then are being asked to bring back your empties to get the refund. So you'll have to stand there, put them into a machine, as far as I'm aware. This caller says, why should I have to do this when I already pay for a recycling bin and bring things to the recycling banks? The system will only result in a reduction in buying these goods because personally, I think I do enough and shouldn't be charged twice to recycle. But as I say, I know more and more people, and maybe it's a rural Ireland thing, more and more people get the shopping delivered. So this stuff is going to be stored. Where do you store it? Or maybe it's a fantastic thing. I just thought, there seems to be a decent system there, and now we have this new system. What do you all think? 086 60 25,000. Right, so got this email from where is that email? It's this one. It's from Marion that I wanted to read out. Having listened to yesterday morning's interview with the immigrant, now, I'm not sure if he's classed himself as an immigrant. I think he's an Irish citizen at this point. But anyway, having listened to this morning's interview with the immigrant, apologies, I do not recall his name. I remain incensed hours afterwards for a few reasons. Firstly, his sense of entitlement as an immigrant to having housing and benefits granted as a matter of course did little to garner support and understanding around immigration issues, but rather, I feel it had the opposite effect in promoting resentment around his arrogance and expectation of freebies. What right has this man to heavily and repeatedly criticise the Irish government policies unopposed by Mr. Hughes? What about educating us on his government's policies and social care system that has him here? Yes, there are deficits in Irish policies, but the huge and rapid volume of immigration in a very short time period has been overwhelming. As a person who, after my leaving cert, had to emigrate from a small village to find work, I did not go with the expectation of having housing, funding, etc. handed to me, but rather I was prepared to work, pay taxes and fund myself through third level education to advance my occupational promotional opportunities, not handouts. So this is also someone who's actually emigrated from Ireland to somewhere else. I want to also comment on the submissive attitude of Mr. Hughes. Had this been a white guest, he would have been more robustly challenged on some of the statements made by the interviewee. Is it that people are now constrained by the threat of being called racist or bigoted or face a complaint if they challenge unfair or irrational statements? If so, we will soon lose the gift of freedom of speech. I was so disappointed that Mr. Hughes thought it necessary in the course of fawning to his guest to belittle the Irish people. To what purpose? I'm not a native Irish speaker, but that does not make me any less a proud Irish person to the core. An apology should be issued promptly. Thanks, Marion. I appreciate that. Now, what you have to remember is that, and they'll come in thick and fast over the course of this morning, they have to. A lot of people message in saying, Ireland's for the Irish. We need to stop mass immigration. They're only here to sponge. They're only here because of the money, over and over and over again. Now, we got one voice on yesterday who put a counter view. Okay, and because he was given a platform to say that, and I did put all the points to him, that all of a sudden I'm submissive and should offer an apology. I don't see why, because as I say, there's an awful lot of anti-immigrant sentiment out there, and we had an immigrant in here who made the argument as to why that shouldn't be the case. So that's one voice against all the other voices that we often hear. And in asking questions and putting questions to someone, their answers are very important, okay? They don't always have to be challenged in that they can stand there. Listeners to this show are very, very clever and very intelligent, and they can make up their own minds as well. I challenged him on many different elements of it, but he is of the view, whether you like it or not, he is of the view, and it's not for me to sort of take an anti-immigrant position because that's not really who I am or what I would do. He's of the opinion that the government have signed up to a charter which means people from other countries who are fleeing are entitled to come here and they should be entitled to housing and what have you. Now, that is his view. 20% of the working population in this country are immigrants, just like you when you went off wherever you went to. 20% of them are here working as well. I don't know what percentage are here not to work and just to garner the state or whatever way you might describe it. But as I say, there is an awful lot of information out there, and for once, we had an immigrant voice. You might not like his answers, but they are his answers. So you think I should not allow him to speak? That we only hear one side of an argument or debate? Where would that get us? I don't think that would get us anywhere. But anyway, listen, I really appreciate you listening. I appreciate your response. And thank you very much for that. But it's just to try and get all views out there. The great public of the Northwest can make up their own minds. They're well capable of doing so. I'm not certainly able to influence, nor would I want to. Okay, keep your comments coming through. If you want a rebuttal on that, please get back in touch with us. You know, this is not a dictatorship. I'm just giving you an honest answer as to your email off the back of that interview. And I really do appreciate you taking the time to get in touch with us. Quake Shake is a new outreach programme looking for people of all ages across Ireland to observe and study local and global earthquakes. Laura Riley is geophysicist with the Dublin Institute of Advanced Studies. Good morning to you, Laura. Thanks for your time today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on the show.
No, it's good to have you on the program. We kind of always have had an interest in earthquakes in this part of the world because we've got St. Columba's School in Stranorlar, which often is one of the first to sort of identify tremors, either locally or internationally. And I always, well, not always, initially found it amazing that we could have an event, you know, almost on the other side of the world, and it's being recorded at their equipment in Stranorlar. It's kind of mind-boggling in a way, but presumably the more of this equipment we have, the more accurate we can be in terms of location and depth and what have you. Is that what it's all about?
Yeah, you're exactly correct. That's it. And St. Columba's and Stranorlar are amazing. They basically recorded the most amount of earthquakes on our old outreach program called Seismology in Schools, and they now have a new Raspberry Shake. They were actually the first school in Ireland to receive a Raspberry Shake. And they're extremely active. And you're absolutely correct. The more Raspberry Shakes we have, the more data we collect, the more accurate our data will be. And essentially, the more actual Irish earthquakes we will pick up, because we'll have more data and more seismometers.
So when you have this equipment there, which obviously has to be incredibly insensitive, how does it work? How does it differentiate between a local quarry or a digger that's doing some rock breaking, you know, 20 miles away, or, as I say, a lorry passing a building or what have you? How without getting too technical, how does it work and how does it sort of get rid of the white noise, so to speak?
Yeah, so you're correct in saying you're always going to have noise from roads, noise from construction, you're going to have quarry blasts, but basically the waveform, like the trace, the wiggle, will look slightly different from an actual earthquake in comparison to background noise like traffic. You can always see your commute, your 9 o'clock in the morning, and see that the noise levels are really super high, and the system will automatically pick out that it's an earthquake. So it's an online system via the Raspberry Shake website, and they basically take hundreds of seismometers and they go, okay, did this seismometer pick up that waveform? Is it picked up on another seismometer in Australia? And then it basically does a mathematical formula that puts it all together and goes, oh, that actually was an earthquake. It wasn't just a lorry on the road or a bus going past. So that's kind of a simple way of saying that's how it picks up the earthquakes.
Okay, we saw the awful earthquakes earlier this year in the Turkey region, okay? So what is actually happening so that then ends up being recorded on a piece of equipment in Stranorlar? Is it vibrations of the earth? Or just give us a wee insight as to what the equipment here is recording.
Yeah, so the equipment is recording seismic waves that radiate and travel outwards all around the globe.
Now, is that a seismic? That's not a sound, is it? That's like a reverberation or a vibration?
It's a seismic wave.
Right.
There's the main types of seismic waves are primary waves and surface waves.
Okay.
And so the seismometer is basically, it's like a listening device. It's tuned to listen for these seismic waves and it can pick up the vibration. The seismometer consists of a thing called a geophone, which literally has a coil and a mass, and it moves up and down when the like waves pass, and that's what it measures. And then there's this little thing called a Raspberry Pi inside the Raspberry Shake seismometer, and there's a digitizer. So it then transforms the data onto online data.
Brilliant stuff. Right. So, say for instance, like triangulation with mobile masts, you know, so you can get a rough idea where something is with one mast, but if you can sort of measure the strength of signals from three or more, you can drill down more specifically as to where something actually is located. Is that what we could achieve with more of this, this equipment around the country? Yes, thanks. Go ahead. Yeah.
That's exactly correct. And we're actually currently developing an exercise where we're using triangulation from three Raspberry Shake stations that recorded the magnitude 2.5 6th of May Donegal earthquake. And what we're actually finding is that it's not necessarily fully hitting the epicenter of the location of where the earthquake was. And that's because we only have three stations. And the more stations you have, the more accurate your data becomes.
How do you determine the magnitude, but also the depth?
Yeah, so the depth is it can be quite hard to fully figure out the depth, but the magnitude comes from looking at the waveforms and looking at it from all around the globe and doing some calculations pretty much to figure out the magnitude. And it's based off of the waveforms and the traces pretty much. And yeah, the system pretty much does it automatically nowadays. It's so technologically advanced that
you don't have to worry about it.
Into a system. Yeah.
But
you also pick. So this exercise to locate the epicenter of the Donegal earthquake, the people will actually be picking the locations of where the seismic waves arrive. So there's a primary arrival, which is the first wave, and then there's the secondary arrival. So people will actually be picking that out, correlating the time, and then they calculate the distance from the earthquake.
Now, the scale, the magnitude scale, you know, a magnitude 5 earthquake is not double a 2.5 earthquake.
Or no, is it like it's on a linear scale?
Yeah, so as you go up, so there's a huge difference between a 2.5 and a 3 magnitude.
Yeah, or 3.5.
3.5, yeah.
100, yes, times. So, and it's basically.
So say that again, a 3.5 magnitude earthquake is 100 times out of a 2.5.
Yes. Wow. That's correct. Yeah. I'm like, I probably need to double check that's fully accurate. It's logarithmic, the scale.
Yeah. Okay. No, it's fascinating.
And the energy increase is how you feel the difference, pretty much.
So, in terms of an earthquake that shakes the ground and an earthquake that breaks the ground or shakes very violently, are there different types of earthquakes or is that just down to depth?
Yeah, so depth is a huge factor in how much damage is actually caused by the earthquake. That would be a main factor. So a shallower depth and a large magnitude can cause significant amount of damage, whereas a larger depth will cause less damage.
And is it all nature? Has there been any evidence or proof that any man/woman activity on the surface can sort of trigger or exacerbate earthquakes? Or is this just a big ball of rock moving around and finding its settling points?
So, yes, in certain regions of the world, you can say that there is actual like human effects that can cause earthquakes. But in Ireland, this has never been found to be the case. We don't have any issues. Like in some parts of America, there may be some earthquakes that have been triggered by human activity, but I actually wouldn't really know too much about that myself. I wouldn't tend to look into it. Majority of the time, they are naturally caused.
So how does one become then a citizen seismologist? What's involved? Is there a cost? What do you need? Where do you need to be? All that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so to become a citizen seismologist, we're saying to come to our website. You don't necessarily need a Raspberry Shake seismometer to be involved. Our website, www.quakeshake.ie, it's going to be fully interactive for people to get involved. It's going to be updated with news about recent earthquakes. It has information about earthquakes, historical earthquakes. And you can, if you are interested, you can email us at info@quakeshake.ie. And the third option is that you could also purchase a seismometer, but there's many other ways to get involved. You don't necessarily need to have a seismometer to be involved. It's run on the Raspberry Shake website, and this is all open source data.
Calling it Raspberry Shake, by the way?
A Raspberry Shake is actually the type of seismometer that we're using for this program. And it's called a Raspberry Shake because it has a little Raspberry Pi computer inside of the seismometer.
Right, okay, yeah.
And that's how the name Raspberry Shake actually originates from.
And it's all really quite clever because it's like a milkshake.
Yeah, exactly. It's a really good name. Shakes.
Yeah, so. Of course. Yeah, you're a geophysicist. What is a geophysicist? What is your particular focus?
Yeah, so to me, the simplest way of describing a geophysicist is that we look at the interior of the Earth and what we can't see. We look into the Earth. So there's different types of geophysics. There's people who study earthquakes, there's people who study volcanoes, there's people who study like the lithosphere, magnetotellurics.
What's your area of expertise? What do you like to, you know, what excites you?
Earthquakes are what excite me, and teaching people about earthquakes, that's what I really enjoy about geophysics. That would be my field and area.
Okay. Well, listen, thank you for your time. People can contact the team, info@quakeshake.ie. Or what was the website you mentioned?
www.quakeshake.ie. And people can follow our social media accounts on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, and you can follow our YouTube at quakeshake_, and that's lowercase letters. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, and people could really contribute to us, you know, being able to identify more accurately the location and strength of these earthquakes in Ireland particularly. Okay, listen, thanks for your time, Laura. Have a good evening.
Thank you, you too.
Hi, Laura Riley, geophysicist with the Dublin Institute for Advanced Studies. Now we have some bonus John Breslin for you. He's in studio with us. What's so funny about that?
Some bonus John Breslin. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing.
It's bonus content. It's a good thing, John. Yeah.
How are you?
You haven't been out this time of the morning for a while. I'm good. And you are working, and Highland Radio is working through your show with the Lions Club in Donegal. Tell us what's happening.
Well, it's an online auction, and the Lions Club came to us with the idea, and it's a great one because it's an online auction. They're essentially doing all the work. They went out and they gathered up all the items, and then it's up to us to let people know that the auction is online, and just to go online and put in your bids. So it's been on for the last couple of weeks, and it ends today. So that's really just the message that we want to get out. If you've put in a bid, go back in and check and see if you've been outbid and you want to put in another one, or if you haven't been in already, you know, go on there and see what's available, and maybe put a bid on something if you fancy it.
Yeah, and which a good part of all of this, of course, is successful bidders will receive their vouchers and items the week starting December 11th. So yeah, in time for Christmas.
Yeah, they're really well organised, and once today is over, and they set about the task of putting people together with you know, what they've got. And they intend to have it all done, I think, within a week. Yeah, so people will have what they want for Christmas, just in case they want maybe to gift it to somebody, or they want to use it before Christmas or whatever. So that's important, yeah.
Over 100 businesses in Donegal have contributed. The whole thing's sponsored by Super Value, ensuring every penny raised directly benefits those in need. Have you some sort of star lots that you can run through for us, or is that putting you on the
yes
spot?
Yes and no. There's so many. I think there's 123 at the last count. Mm. And I met with the Lions Club yesterday, and there's a few actually late additions. So 123 at the last count, and they range in size and, you know, type and variety. There's you know, there's vouchers for all sorts of things, and you know, the value of those vouchers varies as well. And then there's physical items, and then there's things like, you know, nights away, weekends away. There's a lot of golfing experiences.
Yeah, so, Rossapenna, Dunfanaghy, Critchall, yeah. Ballyliffin, Letterkenny, Donegal Golf Club, they're all involved in this. Because I suppose the idea, John, is that, you know, you can get something you want as well, because there's so much stuff in there, but at the same time, you're supporting. You know, which is always a great way to
give.
I would
say it's for Donegal Food Response Network, and there's 21 of these networks, or 21 of these outlets dotted around Donegal. Mm. It's a great cause, granted. But you know what? I'd say to anybody, don't buy something that you're not interested in. You go in there. There's 123 items, and maybe more at this stage. So if you fancy something, if there's something that you think you could use or somebody else could use, then by all means, put in a bid.
Now, the website's excellent, isn't it? It's bidding. Well, I won't just go through the actual DonegalFoodResponse.ie, and you'll click through. But let's say, for an example, a lot of stuff is still in and around the retail value. Some of it's underneath it as well. So I'm thinking Letterkenny Activity Centre. Activities and experience, current bid €30. The retail value's €50. It's closing soon. So that's just one example. There's other fantastic vouchers for other spaces that are still under actual the retail value.
Well,
so
you're
it's
going
actually
to get,
almost like a sale as well, to some extent.
There's a
it?
Few items that have gone over the value
of course,
that people have decided, listen, I want that, and I'm prepared to pay whatever for it. But the vast majority of things, you're going to get them for less than their value.
Well, look at here, Glencore Circle K, Glencore Service Station voucher, right? Currently, sorry, the retail voucher is worth 100 euro. The current bid, 75.
So you're going to save, there you go, you save 25 90, euro straight away.
You're donating, you right? And 10% back in your pocket.
If that's what it goes for, absolutely.
Exactly, if. Of yes. course. But it's like everything. It's like eBay or anything. You have to have a punt.
Yeah.
All right. Brilliant stuff. Okay. It's all very exciting. What are you going to be doing on the show later?
Just going through
just
the items.
Let people know more.
Yes. I'm going through some of the items. I don't have the full list here, but Keith's coming on for an hour and then David James coming on for an hour. We'll just be going through some of the items that are, you know, with low, some items with no bids. Others have low bids, and then there's some really attractive things that people might have missed out on. So we're going
through them. Stuff here, John.
I know.
There is some brilliant stuff. Please go on and have a look. DonegalFoodResponse.ie. Even if you just go and effectively to shop. Now, as John quite rightly pointed out, you have to be the successful bidder. But when does it actually close?
It closes today.
Today. So today. There is a real opportunity to donate to the Donegal Food Response and actually get something in and around its value or a little bit less. Now, as you say, it could go down to bidding and whatever, but there's so much stuff there. All right, that's brilliant, John.
I'd say most things will go for less than their retail value.
I think so, yeah. But yet, it's generating so much money for a fantastic service such as the Donegal Food Response. So yours is actually kind of an interesting, as always, special programme today. You've got co-presenters.
Yeah, absolutely. That's an unusual element in itself. And it's a little bit of a, I don't know, radio shopping, for want of a better word.
Okay. HVC.
Yeah. Okay. Right. With a twist.
All right. So tune in. That's going to be fun. Tune into that from 12. John Bresson, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks,
looking forward to that. All right. Back after the news and obituary notices.